Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
What's wrong with the economy? What's it going to take to fix it? Let's go in depth with Brian Peterson, professor of economics with Central College. Brian, in your opinion, what's the current state of the American economy?
Troubled is the short version. The longer version is we have issues that need to be addressed. We have short-term issues that deal with unemployment, job growth, things like that. And then we have longer-term issues that deal with the national debt, obviously, looking at changes to entitlement programs and so forth. We're at a point now where we have to make some serious decisions.
And how is that different than, say, 10 years ago? What's changed in 10 years?
Over the last 10 years, and actually if you can draw that back another an additional 10 years, what's changed is the global economy. The landscape has changed in the sense that what happens in other countries now materially affects what happens here. And vice versa. We see that with the issues that the European Union is having. Those issues come across the ocean to us in terms of financing our deficits. The fastest growing segment of the owners of our debt is increasingly foreign. So it becomes more and more important that in order for us to remain a strong economy, we have to find a way to do things better, do things more efficiently, and make sure that we get growth. And that involves a variety of spending and tax changes.
Okay, spending and tax changes.
Yes.
Now that's what everybody's talking about now. And what are the different ideas that are out there on how to fix it, both short-term and long-term?
Well, one of the things that we saw with the conversation over the over raising the debt ceiling is the need to reduce the deficit, reduce the annual deficit and the overall national debt by either spending cuts or tax revenue increases or a combination of the two. And there are those who would argue that we have to have increases in tax revenues, right? If you want to pay down any debt that you have, you have to get a raise in your salary. There are those who argue that we have to do this through spending cuts. And the argument would be that the spending cuts would create additional private sector growth and therefore increase the tax base so that we wouldn't have to increase tax rates. And if you increase the tax base, then you're in a position to increase revenues without increasing the rate.
That's all the way from Ronald Reagan.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And the reality is somewhere in between, that if we're focusing on finding a way, if we just focus on finding a way to reduce the debt, then we have to separate what we would think about as short-term debt and long-term debt. Short-term debt would be things along the lines of having to pay out increases in unemployment benefits. Do we want to raise the payroll tax or extend the payroll tax cut, I should say? Those sorts of things that might increase the deficit in the short term. And we would do that, as people have been arguing, to have some level of fiscal stimulus. That's going to get the economy back on track.
And then we think a stimulus.
The problem with short-term fiscal austerity, which is what's being talked about right now, and that's the result of the debt ceiling, is that consumers aren't spending. Firms aren't spending because consumers aren't spending. So there's a significant amount of uncertainty. If people aren't spending, then where are we going to get the growth? At this point, the government is the quickest place in which to engage in that. And I think a lot of economists would agree that's for short-term growth. We're gonna need to focus on an increase in spending, not a decrease. Long term, we need to think about scaling back the debt. And you do that by a variety of spending cuts and revenue increases. And you can do this in a variety of ways. And on the spending side, we need to take a look at what are being referred to as entitlement programs, things like Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, in the context of what can be done to make things more efficient. And without favoring one over another, examples that I've heard have included in terms of Social Security, for example, to raise the retirement age. Let's change the way benefits are indexed to inflation every year so as to reduce spending over time. Let's means test Social Security benefits so that those who truly don't need to have Social Security, we don't necessarily need to pay for that, given that Social Security was always designed as a safety net, not as a retirement annuity. On the other side, in terms of tax revenue, is you can't get away from the fact that we've put ourselves in the position where we're not going to be able to get out of this hole without some revenue increases. And it doesn't have to be significant, whether we're talking about eliminating loopholes, which was one of the proposals set up by President Obama. Let's increase revenues by eliminating loopholes.
Loopholes like what?
Loopholes like, well, even as it could be anything from something that allows a very smart tax accountant to shelter your income someplace so that you don't have to pay any taxes on it, that you might have access to, but I don't. And it could be something else where Charles Krauthammer had wrote an article where he suggested that as we think about closing loopholes, one of those loopholes, generally speaking, would be the kinds of deductions that we're allowed to take. That maybe we focus on reducing, stopping short of eliminating, but reducing things like the mortgage interest deduction on homeownership. He never suggested charitable contributions, but healthcare deductions, all of those sorts of things that we're able to back out of our taxable income. Maybe this is the time that we need to think about modifying those.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation about the state of the American economy with Brian Peterson, professor of economics at Central College. But that would take money out of the hands of the consumer. Virtually everybody I know, that would take money out of their pockets.
Yes and no. The problem with trying to articulate exactly what's going to happen when you do this is economists argue that any time you engage in a movement away from the market, either in terms of a subsidy or in terms of a tax, even as a tax deduction, you distort behavior. That if I'm given a deduction for the mortgage interest that I pay, I have an incentive to buy more house than I need because that gives me a greater deduction. And again, notice I'm not saying more than I can afford. It's at this point more than I need. And so it's inefficient behavior because what I could be doing is buying a smaller house and then engaging in additional consumption, and that becomes efficient from a market perspective, but doesn't necessarily take income out of my hands because as I'm losing the interest deduction, I'm getting a smaller house, and therefore I'm paying less. So to say that we're going to, this is the problem with combining politics and economics. To say that we reduce the deduction for charitable interest, well, that means people have said, well, that just means that people are going to stop giving to charities. Yes and no, we don't know that, because what we do know is that it has distorted behavior, but we don't know necessarily exactly how. So when we think about closing those kinds of inefficiencies, we potentially can modify the amount of revenue, increase the amount of revenue that the government is taking in, but not necessarily make consumers worse off. Because yes, you're going to buy a different house, but you're going to be able to buy different things with the amount of money you're saving by having a smaller mortgage.
Now, I haven't traditionally thought of these kinds of things as loopholes. What I think are as loopholes are things that result in GE and a lot of other large businesses not paying any taxes at all where you and I pay taxes. Those are loopholes, and the offshore deals and setting up your tax base overseas, those are loopholes to, I think, most of America.
Well, and I don't disagree with that. Those are, to me, those are givens. Those are things that even if you're not interested in reducing the debt, if your goal is to make a tax system more efficient, you eliminate those things too. I think back to the comment that Mitt Romney made at the state fair that he's been taking a lot of flack for, that in response to someone, he said, corporations are people, my friend. Well, if they're people, then we tax them at the same rate, which could eliminate what's referred to as the double taxation. You tax it at the corporate interest, at the corporate level, and then at the personal level when it returns to shareholders and owners. But at the same time, you need to eliminate those as well.
Eliminate what?
Those particular loopholes that you're referring to.
Okay.
The largest companies pay very, very low taxes because they're able to shelter their income through perfectly legal means, but not efficient means. And this is where economists look at. There's a difference between what we refer to as tax evasion and tax avoidance. Evasive behavior is illegal. I am knowingly doing something illegal in order to not pay tax. That could be blatantly, I'm choosing not to file taxes. Tax avoidance behavior is legal, but is inefficient. If you had the ability to shelter all of your income in the Cayman Islands or in a Swiss bank in order to not pay taxes, in the same vein, and you were able to take deductions and to do the things that larger corporations are able to do in order to not pay taxes, you'd have an incentive to do that, which is perfectly legal, but is inefficient. Because now what we're talking about doing is expending resources to close those loopholes in the name of increased equity. We say it's not fair that corporations don't pay taxes. The goals of a tax system, if we think about these notions of efficiency and equity, what should the tax system look like in a horizontal sense? If you and I both earn $50,000 a year, should we be paying the same average tax rate? Okay. From a vertical perspective, if I earn $40,000 a year and you earn $80,000, should you be paying more in taxes? Okay. Now, philosophically, whether that's more in absolute versus relative terms, but we can think about efficiency and equity in a vertical sense and a horizontal sense. And the moment we start thinking about deductions, tax credits, and things like that, we completely move away from those notions of horizontal and vertical equity. All right, so in other words, if you and I earn exactly the same income, I choose to buy a larger house. I get a larger mortgage interest deduction. I'm paying less taxes than you. Horizontally, that's not necessarily equitable. Okay, you with the larger income can afford to buy more house and can afford to buy lots more things. You can engage in additional contributions to charity and so forth than someone with lower incomes. And now all of a sudden you're paying a lower tax rate than I am.
Okay.
Even though I make half as much as you, I'm paying more as a share of my income in taxes. That's not vertically equitable. And so when we start thinking about revising the tax system, what people have been talking about, and again, you can put all of these proposals under kind of the same umbrella, the closing loopholes, even moving to a flat tax, even moving to a national consumption tax. The goal is make the system more efficient, more equitable, horizontally and vertically.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation about the state of the American economy with Brian Peterson, professor of economics at Central College. What you're proposing, does it sit well, do you think, with the Obama administration, and does it sit well, it doesn't seem to sit well to me, with what a lot of the Republicans are saying, and certainly the Tea Party?
Well, and I think, and again, this is the problem with incorporating politics into economics. In terms of economics, I think most people would understand exactly what it is that we need to do. We have a massive debt that is projected to increase over time. By 2015, we're looking at somewhere around 110% of GDP will be our national debt. It's unsustainable. And when I say unsustainable, I don't necessarily mean that our economy is going to come crashing down. What I mean by that is when you go to a bank looking for a mortgage, they will allow you to have a mortgage that's equal to 24 to 28% of your monthly gross income. To them, that is sustainable because you can have that much in a mortgage payment and then do all of your other expenses in a month and still be able to make the payments without any difficulty. Total indebtedness, they're willing to go 36 to 39%. There were in the heat of the economic growth we had 10 years ago, I had a bank when I was looking for a mortgage say that I could go up to 50% of my gross monthly income in debt. To me, that's not sustainable because there's no way that I could continue to make those payments over time, in my mind. So it's simply a function of at some point the debt is going to grow so large that we're going to be spending so much money on debt service that we're not going to be able to do the things we want to do. And that's when we're going to encounter problems. And the way we're going to do this is through both spending and revenue changes. And somewhere in the middle, there has to be compromise. A lot of economists believe that our debt has grown to the point where simple economic growth, increasing the tax base, is insufficient to pay down the debt, which is why they're arguing that we've got to increase the tax rate as well. And that doesn't necessarily have to apply consistently, always, but at least at some point over a period of time, that's going to have to happen, right? We could talk about letting the Bush tax cuts sunset again. We could talk about raising, as Warren Buffett argued in the New York Times article recently, that we raise the tax rate on those earning incomes of $1 million a year or more, or $10 million a year or more. Even modifying the system such that we eliminate a couple of those sorts of deductions. These are things that can be done that are considered revenue generators, but don't necessarily have to be tax increases. Right. In other words, the issue that the Obama administration had been talking about eliminating those loopholes so that, you know, GE will actually pay some tax on its billions of dollars in profits. The Republicans argue that amounts to a tax increase because revenues are going up. But there are others who would argue that's actually a spending cut because now we don't have to expend the resources in order to try to get that back. If we eliminate the opportunities that people have to engage in avoidance behavior or, God forbid, even evasive behavior, we don't have to expend the resources to try to get it back. So whether you view it as a spending cut or revenue increase is a matter of perspective. What it does is make the tax system more efficient and raises revenues. And I think what we have to do and what the super committee has to do, and I have to admit I'm very concerned that it's just not going to happen.
The committee
that's been appointed as part of the debt ceiling that has to come up with a series of proposals by November 23rd, that it comes up with a series of potentially short-term changes as well as long-term changes. And the long-term changes have to come in the context of compromise from the left in terms of entitlement changes, and it has to come from the right in the context of revenue increases. If we're serious about getting it done, if we're serious about pushing the economy forward, if we're serious about regaining that AAA status that everyone is worried about from S&P, somewhere in the middle is going to be the solution.
Thanks to Brian Peterson for contributing to the program. For KNIA, KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.